This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Bob Mata is with us, defense attorney and host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Get that wherever you download podcasts. Very good one. I want to talk right now about Brian Koberger a little bit, some of the motions that were presented on Friday, and some of the evidence that we know exists and doesn't exist. There's very likely a ton of things that we do not know. We're making these judgment calls and these speculations and assumptions just solely on what's been leaked out or what has been found in the affidavits and such. But there's likely far more information, maybe super damning, maybe very exonerating. We just don't know yet. The digital evidence is going to be extremely interesting, especially when it comes to his cell phone. I think that will paint maybe even a more detailed picture of, you know, is this a man who had data on his phone that relates to those girls? If so, that's very concerning. If not, if this phone's completely clear of anything to do with this, I think is also very impactful, because it doesn't really show that there was any sort of planning to this, or at least not in a digital form on his phone.
Yeah, no, dude, completely. Because the reality is, like you said, there has been a massive investigation that's going on post-arrest. That is always the case.
Yeah.
Like I talk about it all the time on my podcast. You know, the misnomer that investigations stop upon arrest is completely incorrect. Frankly, that's when it really gets rolling, because that is the point in time when law enforcement has more access to the defendant and everyone he knows or she knows in their past, everyone that they know currently. They're going to have access to their property, whether it be vehicles, whether it be the real property, houses, apartments. They're going to have access to all the devices. They are digging into all of that stuff. And that's going to tell the tale. Like you said, if they're digging through all the devices, not just his phone, but any kind of computers, anything. And there is, like, with respect to like cell phones, there is no deleting anything. And I know it firsthand from my client, Anthony Garcia. They use that, you know, Cellebrite, they plug the phone in, they extract all the data, they put it onto a dummy phone, and it is like, it's over 90% of what it recovers of what people think that they've deleted from their phone.
Sure.
So they're, you know what I mean? So that's going to tell the tale. It's like you said, if they're finding evidence of him creeping on them, whether through digitally and, you know, trolling their Instagram or, you know, whatever the case may be. Various searches, if they find that he purchased the weapon from Amazon, like they are claiming that they found, you know, on the Dateline episode that I was so upset about, that they said that an unnamed source leaked that they found the search and the purchase on Amazon of the sheath and the knife.
Yeah.
You know, but if that's true, obviously that is a massive piece of evidence and it's going to sink the ship for him. You know what I'm saying? So in all that is yet to be seen. But, you know, so that's why I know this case, it's just one of those cases, one of those rare cases where everyone wants to know about it. Everyone has an opinion on it. We're all dying to hear everything now, because that's what the age that we live in. We have very short attention spans as a people. We want all of our information now. We want it, you know, yesterday. Like, this waiting thing, we're not happy with, because we live in sound bites. You know, I mean, we just live in a very different age. And it's the information age. And, you know, like, all of us, and me included, like, I'm certainly not sitting here like acting like I'm not absolutely dying to know what evidence they have, because I absolutely am, you know. Sure, sure. But the reality is, we're just going to have to wait to trial.
How important is the second request to stay the court proceedings to investigate potential procedural issues with the grand jury? Is this something, and I know you're coming from a defense standpoint, and that's what I want. How crucial is that second motion?
Yeah, but I'm super objective.
Sure.
Like, you know, I'm a lifetime defense guy, but, you know, I'm also very objective. Anybody that listens to my podcast knows. And that's true, you know, because I don't want to have tunnel vision. I don't want to have, you know, just a defense perspective. I like, and if you're a good attorney, you're looking at it from both sides.
Sure.
In order to truly understand the issue, right? So, you know, it's kind of huge. And the argument from the state to kind of break down what's going on is that it's simple. They're saying, because at this point in time, Koberger has not waived his speedy trial. Okay. And that is like a bright line rule, that if they don't go to trial before his speedy trial right demand dictates the case is dismissed. So it's like it. So that's why the judge set that date. Mm-hmm. That October date is set in stone, and they set it a few weeks before the time was to run. And what the state is arguing is that all Ann Taylor is doing right now is filing frivolous laws or frivolous motions in order to try to toll the time, to delay the time so that it's not counting against the defendant because she wants more time to prepare. And what Ann Taylor is saying is that, okay, well, the state is playing games with me. First of all, they said, we're going to have a preliminary hearing. And we had conversations and, you know, we were all in agreement that we're going to do this. I went to my client. I asked if he'd waive his speedy trial or his speedy preliminary hearing, which was 14 days. Mm-hmm. All right. So like in Idaho, and the statute's different in every state. In Idaho, essentially what happens is that they've got a 14-day time frame in which they have to have a preliminary hearing. That's mm-hmm. it. Or in the event that the defendant is going to waive it. And if the defendant waives it, then you're in good shape in terms of it going forward. So they went forward for months thinking that the preliminary hearing was going to be going on. Now, I had predicted back in February, like via my TikTok, I'm like, there's no way they're going to a preliminary hearing on this, not in light of what we all know has been going on with the media and just the interest in the case, the sealed nature of the case in terms of them not wanting to get any of the evidence out there for the public to be consuming and speculating on. So, you know, what made the most sense from the state's perspective is to go to a grand jury because none of that is disclosed. Because a preliminary hearing is essentially a mini trial. Mm-hmm. They would have put witnesses on. There would have been evidence put on and cross-examination would have occurred. It's literally a mini trial. So yeah. We would have gotten much, much more information than we had ever had in this case if that had occurred. So, and I don't know what the discussions were between Thompson and Taylor. Like, I don't know if he's like sneaking around behind her back, doesn't even let her know we're convening a grand jury, or he may have told her, but he told her late in the game. Like he may have said, hey, you know, by the way, you know, I know this, the preliminary hearing is coming up, but I'm convening a grand jury because they're unusual in Idaho.
Yeah.
Like they don't do them often. So, you know, that's basically what the argument is. Ann Taylor's trying to get the time told, meaning that they're going to stop the clock so that she has time to prepare because she's claiming that they've been slow playing on the discovery, forcing her to file motions to in order to get the discovery. And, you know, the fact that they blindsided her by not going to a preliminary hearing, which she was relying on for a lot of things in terms of getting evidence, you know, but like that argument from Ann Taylor's side kind of falls on deaf ears because she has the discovery.
Yeah.
You know, so like the stronger of the two arguments is the, you know, the fact that the state seems to be slow playing a little bit, but that kind of gamesmanship, like we're just paying more attention to this case. You know, I see that in every case that I've ever handled. There's always arguments between the state and us in terms of getting stuff turned over. We'll get like a huge discovery dump, you know, certain like data may not work. Like I might get a CD-ROM if they're going old school, or I might get a flash drive where this stuff's not working. And then I'll type them a letter and I'll say, hey, you know, E-147, you know, it says it's an interview. It's not working. Mm-hmm. I need a working copy. Typically, they'll get it right over to you. You know, if there's issues about things that we're asking for and the state's position is like, look, that doesn't fall within the rules. We don't think that we have to give it to you. That's when you get a motion to compel. And that's because that's the avenue that they have to get in front of the judge for the judge to make the decision whether or not they have to turn it over. So, you know, so that's her argument that those kind of delays are forcing them. Because that, dude, I'm telling you, that October date, if you're the attorneys preparing for this case, is the blink of an eye.
Sure.
Okay, I know that like for normal people just sitting there like, well, it's October. No, like that will feel like it's tomorrow if you're trying to prepare a case of this magnitude because there is so much to do. People just have no idea that are not attorneys and specifically trial attorneys, how much preparation goes into these trials. You know, these aren't just lawyers and they're winging it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It takes a massive amount of preparation with witnesses and evidence and getting your arguments straight and crafting your direct examinations and your cross examinations and interviewing witnesses. It's huge. It's a monumental task. I mean, I am still of the mindset that there's no way this thing's going in October, you know, which like, and that's part of the animus between Thompson and Taylor, you know, like there is nothing that prosecutors abhor more than being forced to trial on a speedy because it's not giving them the time to prepare. And it's also not giving the defense the time to prepare. It, you know, which is part of the risk of demanding a speedy trial. You know, I mean, that it's not just punishing the state and saying, okay, I'm going to put you to the test. You're going to trial way before you're ready. And it's a huge gamble on the part of the defense saying, look, I don't think they're going to be ready. There's just too much. But part and parcel of that is you're not going to be ready either. And you're going to have these discovery issues that are going to be going on. So it's a very interesting chess match that's going on between that. And believe me, that's what it is. And there is a part like if I'm Thompson, I'm trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm arguing the same thing. I don't want this thing going in October. I don't care what he's saying in public, you know, because in terms of like, we want to get justice for the kids and we do, but he also wants to make sure he's going to be able to get justice by having a well-prepared case. You know what I'm saying? Like rushing to trial is never the way to do it, but the defendant has a right. So, you know, I think it's going to be a great argument. I'm like actually dying to hear it. Because it cuts both ways. It really does. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, because basically all she's asking for is time.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.